you, Father. This slide presentation was not originally on our program. In fact, I only added it, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago when we came to do the final draft of the program. And one of my parishioners asked, Father, are you going to show us some slides? So this is fulfilling that. It wasn't, again, it wasn't originally planned. I'm not a big picture taker. Don't take very many. But I want to tell you a little bit about Vietnam. But before we do that, I'm going to ask Father Alexander Krissoff to come to the microphone because he goes to Asia all the time. That's his missions are all over Asia. And I want him to tell you about that. Helps us to understand the universality of the church, that the faith can be found in all countries. And the other day, someone asked him, where are you based? And he said, on an airplane. So he travels a lot. Father Krissoff, native of Moscow, Russia, was ordained here at the Fatima Conference in 2008. So 17 years ago, he was ordained here and has been, his missions have been expanding ever since then in Asia. So Father Krissoff will tell you about his missions.
Good afternoon for all. First of all, I apologize for my English. My English is not so good, but I hope I can speak and explain about my pastoral work. What Father Benedict says, I was ordained here 17 years ago. And first of all, I became a pastor of our small Catholic parish in Moscow, Russia. It was only one small Catholic parish in Russia. And I continue to be priest of this parish. But during the 17 years of my priesthood, my pastoral responsibility grew so much, and now I have a responsibility for the 14 missionary parish. 14, yeah, but it's a lot. And in different places. First of all, of course, I continue my pastoral work in Russia. I continue to take care about our community in Moscow. And we have another parish in the south of Russia. The situation in Russia now, it's totally different what it was, I don't know, 10 years ago. Because now we have not, suddenly, we have not a problem with civil authority like it was before. Because now the Russian authority is very favorized for the traditional Christian value. And as, of course, the Russian government, first of all, support the Russian Orthodox Church, Schismatic Church, but traditional church. And of course, they make some favor to us, the traditional Catholic, because we support also the traditional traditional value. I give you some example. In Russia, for example, it's totally forbidden LGBT propaganda. Totally forbidden. If somebody go with one sign of rainbow, it will be arrested by police immediately. In Russia, it's totally forbidden propaganda of abortion. Totally forbidden. Abortion is not forbidden, but propaganda of abortion totally forbidden. It's forbidden the propaganda child-free movement. Totally forbidden. And of course, the Russian government look very bad for the Novus Ordo Church, because after fiducia supplicante and amore laetitia, all these things, they not can consider Novus Ordo like a Christian church who support traditional value. But they know the it exists some Catholic like me who support the traditional value. And even the some people from the government propose me if I can go to television and to explain for the people why we are Catholic and Novus Ordo is not Catholic. They openly proposed me to do this. But from another side, we have a big problem in Russia also, because, you know, now we have a war between Russia and Ukraine. And exactly my parish in the south of Russia, very close to battle line. And I need maybe twice a year go to this parish. And this is a very difficult thing, because this is parish situated in the one small city on the border of the Black Sea, close to Ukraine. And this city, this small town, every time under attack of the Ukrainian drone, sea drone and air drone, and so it's dangerous. And of course, the airport of this town is closed, and nobody can fly in this town. So what I must to do? I must take a plane from Moscow and go through Kazakhstan, make a big fly around the Caucasus Mountain, and landed behind the Caucasus Mountain where the Ukrainian drone cannot arrive. And after take a special car and go 8 hours through the mountain, very bad road, dangerous road, and many cars shoot down on this road and people died, but dangerous road. And I go 8 hours to arrive in this small town to bring a sacrament for our parish. And people from different places from the south of Russia, from the Crimea, from Caucasian region, go to this small town to see me maybe twice a year, and next time when I will go in this place, it will be end of November. So I, if you have a charity, please pray my travel was safe. Another, in the south of Russia, we have one country, its name is Georgia, Republic of Georgia, but it's not an American state, it's an independent state. And also we have a faithful here, and twice a year or three times a year I visit this country to bring them sacrament. And in this Caucasian region, another also very interesting things, I have one sacred mission. This is for people from the Islamic Republic of Iran. We have some community, about 15 people, who is converted to Christianity from Islam. They study themselves Christian faith, and they arrive to conclusion, first of all, the true Christianity, this is the Catholic Church. And of course, after they study Novus Ordo teaching, and they see the Novus Ordo say, oh, all religious is good, and they not understand if all religious is good, why they leave Islam to become Christian in Novus Ordo. They understand Novus Ordo, it's not Catholic. And finally, they find traditional faith, they find me. But this is mission can be very sacred. I cannot go to Iran. I can go like a Russian citizen. But if I arrive as priest, I will be under the watching of the Iranian government. And it will be very dangerous for Christian here, because in Iran, it's forbidden to change Islam for Christianity. If somebody, Muslim, became Christian, he will be in prison forever, or maybe even killed. But so the people who convert in Christianity in Iran, they risk, really risk their life, like a first Christian in the first centuries. And what we're doing, they make a group of faithful, and they rent a minivan, and by this minivan they go to one Caucasian country called Armenia. Armenia is a Christian country, very good Christian country, and Armenia have an excellent relationship with Russia and excellent relationship with Iran. So Russian people and Iranian people can go in Armenia without dangerous. And we rent a hotel, and we stay in hotel maybe twice a year, and I bring them sacrament, confession, communion, and they can receive the old sacrament and after return secretly to Iran. And of course, we cannot make a publication about this on internet, give a schedule, because it's very dangerous for these people in Iran when he returned. So in this region, in Russia and Caucasian region, I have a four mission, one in Moscow, one in battle line where the war with Ukrainian, and in Republic of Georgia, and in Armenia for Iranian people. But from 2018, I take more and more care about the Pacific region. And I fly regularly from Moscow to Manila, where we have a center of Pacific region mission. And we have a permanent chapel, small church in Manila, where I say regular mass. And from Manila, I go to different mission. In beginning, it was only Manila. But now we have a six missionary parish in Republic of Philippines. We have mission in Manila, we have mission in Bohol Island, in Dumaguete, two mission in Cebu Island, and one mission in Cagayan de Oro in the south of Philippines, in Mindanao Island. And so every week I from Manila I fly to visit one or another mission. And outside of Philippines, it's people from different countries ask me to go to them. And so step by step, I start mission in Sultanate of Brunei. This is an Islamic country, very small country. I start the mission in the south of Korea. In south of Korea, we have a good mission. They have a big church consecrated by Bishop Williamson from SSPX. And we have a community about 40 people. But they, after election of Bergoglio, they cannot continue to be with SSPX, and they ask priest who say mass without mention the heretical pope. And so I go three times a year in Korea to bring the sacrament to these people. Also, we have a community in the south of Vietnam, in Saigon. And I really very happy to go with this land. This is land, the motherland of Archbishop Ngo Dinh Thuc, from whom we all our bishops have apostolic succession. And I remember when I arrived first time, my first mass was for Archbishop Ngo Dinh Thuc in this city. And outside of Vietnam, we have a small mission in Singapore. And my 14th mission start in August this year in Indonesia, because one group of the people from Indonesia, from island Java, ask me to go, and I go to them, and they manifestate very good faith. They also, all of them, like in Iran, converted from Islamism to Christianity, to the true Christian faith, but only different in Indonesia, the government not persecuted the people who converted from Islamism to Christian faith. And so really I fly, usually my schedule, I stay in one place, maybe three, four, maximum 1 week, and so practically every week I have two flights to different mission, and continue it's during the last 2 years. And somebody asked me how I survive, because I'm almost 60 years old. I say, I don't know, that God give me force, physical force, but problem is to have a moral force, because I am alone as priest for all this mission, and only in Filipino we have two priests who help me, Father Gerald, who go twice a year, and this year Father Augustine go to help me in this mission in Filipina Islands. But so it's really, it's practically not joke, but when I live in plane, but not in one house. Yeah. And I remember yesterday evening in the rectory, Bishop looked at me seriously and he said, Father, how you sleep in bed? You are comfortable sleep in bed? Maybe you need sleep in chest, like in plane. I say, Maybe. Yeah, but so I ask all of you, if you have a charity, to pray for me that I have, first of all, the moral force to continue all this 14 mission. And I am very, won't say thank you very much for people who help me with material support for my traveling. Because if no support from Mont Saint Michael, I cannot travel so much, especially in Caucasian region, because of course Iranian people, they poor people, and they can only rent for their money the minivan and hotel for themselves, and they cannot pay for priest when he go to Armenia, and same thing in Georgia, and same thing in the battle line in Ukrainian war. The people can support the local chapel, but they cannot support the traveling of the priest to this place. And I am very very thankful for people who permitted me to bring the true sacrament for all this community, really over the whole world. And I hope now I present a little how the Catholic Church grow in the different country, in the different culture, in the different region in Eastern Europe part and in Pacific region. And once more, thank you very much for your support, for your generosity, and especially for your prayers, because I really need the moral support in all this mission. Thank you very much.
As we prepare for the next presentation, that is a good point. If you want to donate for the missions, you can do so through Mount St. Michael. We have the St. Francis of Assisi Missionary Guild, and between Father Casimir and the bishop, they decide, you know, which mission to send funds to, etc. So that would be a good thing to do. In October, we have the second last Sunday of October is called Mission Sunday. So it's the church promoting the work of the missions, encouraging the faithful to support the missions. All right, as soon as we're ready here, we will begin the slide presentation. I have to admit, I never would have gone to Vietnam. I hadn't thought about it, but a very generous family sponsored me. It was all expenses paid. I didn't have to pay a dime for anything. So they wanted to do this for me with a companion, one of the brothers, to come with me. So we did that in the first 2 weeks of August. And we're having a little bit of technical difficulties, so it should start shortly. And we'll start with talking about Vietnam. I have to admit, I didn't know what to expect in going there because, as you know, Vietnam is a communist country. It is a one-party system. The government is communist. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. So I didn't know what to expect, but I found it to be a very modern country. I thought fairly well-to-do, you know, good buildings, good roads, bridges, etc. It wasn't like you might expect a third world country. Vietnam is a very long country, north to south. So if you look on this map, where's my pointer? Do we have it? Oh, here it is. Thank you. So this is Vietnam all the way down here. So what they now call Ho Chi Minh City right there, that used to be Saigon. And that was the capital, that is the capital of Vietnam. I landed in Hanoi up here in the north. And then we flew down to this city right here, Da Nang. And from there drove up to Hue. And then after we were finished in Hue, flew back to Hanoi. So I wasn't in the south because, again, it's a big country. It is 1,000 miles, roughly, from north to south, but yet the land mass could fit into the state of New Mexico. That's the amount of land they have because it's fairly narrow. But even though it's a smaller country, size as far as the square miles would be concerned, there are 100 million people in Vietnam. It ranks number 15 in the world of countries as far as the amount of population. And of those 100 million people, 7.5%, so 7.5 million people, are Catholic, at least nominally. And as we'll talk about, The people there are, the faith is very strong. One of the things that we ran into or encountered was the recitation of the rosary, and it's very beautiful. And we might have problems with, so I had one baptism early on, first day, and then they took us to this buffet, which is amazing, a huge buffet, very different types of food, a lot of fish, and another thing they eat, snails. So I will tell you a little bit about the food. If you want to be a successful missionary, you have to be able to adapt to the country. So we encountered that a lot. This is the first church we visited in Hanoi, the Cua Bac Church, which is a church of the martyrs. And you probably can't read the words, but over the altar, there's, you can see writing, and it's Regina Martyrum Ora Pro Nobis, so Queen of Martyrs, pray for us. So it's a church, and I'll talk more about the martyrs of Vietnam as we go on. Now, in Hanoi, there were these, what are there, eight or so martyrs from Hanoi who were beatified. There have been 117 Vietnamese martyrs beatified by true popes, beginning with Pope Leo XIII, Pius X, Pius XI, Pius XII. I'm not sure, I don't believe Pope Benedict XV, who didn't have as long a reign, I don't think he beatified any. Now, these 117 since then have been canonized by John Paul II, but again, beatified by true popes. So there were, these are the ones from Hanoi. And at the very bottom, you can see the Latin, Mirabilis Deus in Sancti Suis, God is wonderful in his saints. So this was a side altar in that church of Queen of Martyrs. And there's a statue of Blessed Theophane Vinard, quite a famous martyr in Vietnam from France, martyred, I think the year was around 1867. And the martyrdom, by and large, putting to death of Catholics, ended, I believe, around 1870s, 1880s, so towards the end of the martyrdom. And then below that, there was a reliquary, and I couldn't try to get close. I just couldn't read the different saints whose relics were there. So this was, inside the church. Accompanying me, Tiet and Brother Simon on my right, your left. And Tiet, of course, born and raised in Vietnam until he was about 8 or 9 years old, so he speaks the language, of course, so he was our translator. So there was another shrine outside that church, a beautiful courtyard and shrine to Blessed Theophane Vinard. I just had to get a picture of the traffic, because you'll see maybe in the next one, if it plays, the amount of mopeds. And it's quite interesting. I know the same, I've been told by my sister-in-law, the same is the case in the Philippines. A lot of people travel much less expensive. They don't have cars, they travel by mopeds everywhere. So you have to be careful. This, we're in a taxi, and this is going slower than you might expect, but these little mopeds dodging in and out, you gotta be careful. So now this was, you can see I'm not a real good photographer. It's not quite centered. This is the Cathedral of Hanoi. And there is that repulsive little logo up, and we saw that a lot of places. That's the Vatican logo for the Holy Year. So it's just kind of modern art and just kind of defaces the beauty of the facade. So now we're inside the Cathedral of Hanoi, and We encountered this over and over. You would think that you're in Europe or, a Catholic country that has churches, cathedrals built way back when, just beautiful churches. And I really was impressed by this. We saw this everywhere. You see these flowers. They have these orchids that must grow wild because we saw them everywhere. And just one of the altars, this is actually the main altar of the Cathedral of Hanoi, another one of the side altars. I'm not sure, again, which martyr that is. And this is, we're back out in front again. There you see those flowers in the front. But this beautiful statue of Our Lady behind her, there's a flagpole. But this is just looking at the front of the cathedral. Now, that little boy, cute little boy, who never smiled, very serious expression, this is Father Pham's nephew. So that was another baptism in Hanoi. So you look at that expression, cute little kid, you know, very serious, very serious. But very good little boy. All right, so we had his baptism. You see, he's standing on a chair, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. So, of course, we always consecrate the child to Our Lady after a baptism. And then that is Father Pham's father on the right with his daughter holding him because he was shuffled along. And so this would be, of course, the boy that was baptized, his older brother, his dad, Father Pham's younger brother right there, and then she is his wife, and then this is Father Pham's sister and then her husband, and they were the godparents for this boy. But one of the things you notice, they all have bare feet, stocking feet. They always take their shoes off, always, when they go into a house. They always take their shoes off. Custom. Now, I'm not trying to promote Ho Chi Minh. Of course, he was the communist revolutionary who brought such devastation to Vietnam, the communist takeover. But Ho Chi Minh, of course, his face is on the currency. Now try and guess what a 500,000 Vietnamese dong bill is worth. So dong, that's, you know, we have dollars, they have the dong. So you see the number right, the name right there. That bill is worth $20, 500,000. And then this is what the back of it looks like. So the currency, we didn't see currency very much, by the way, because talk about a modern country. They pay everything with their phones. This really took the cake. We were at the emperor's palace, outside the emperor's palace in Hue. And the very kind lady that was taking us around and paying for everything, she wanted to purchase for us some refreshments. And there were two ladies, kind of street vendors. And they had this refreshing drink that was like pineapple inside, you know, homemade inside like a little baggie, a little plastic bag with a straw on it, and it was kind of half frozen, kind of like a slush, you know. So she went and bought one for each of us, and she pulled out her phone. They pulled out their QR code, and she shined it to the QR code and paid for it on the, you know, the street vendor with the phone. They just don't use cash nor credit cards. It's just the phone. This is a church, and I don't remember the name of it outside. This is a Dominican church in a small town, beautiful church, and that's the inside of that church. It was one woman in there praying the rosary. We saw that a lot, people praying the rosary. Side altar in that church of, you know, different martyrs. And this is outside the church. Now, I wonder if you can guess which saint that is. That's a Dominican saint. He lived in the late 1300s, early 1400s. At the time of the Western Schism, it's Saint Vincent Ferrer. And you might wonder, of course, he was from Spain. He, amazing life. He traveled all over Europe giving parish missions. He would speak in a square in front of like 20, 30,000 people. People would follow him from city to city to hear the next sermon. And people who were in the back, you know, even 20,000 people outside the front of the church, he's standing on a platform. They erected a platform every time he gave a mission. The people in the back could hear him just as well as if they were right in front of him. Just an amazing saint, the miracles. But you might be wondering, why do they show wings whenever you have a statue of Saint Vincent Ferrer? Well, he called himself the Angel of Judgment. And he really believed that the end of the world was at hand because of the Western Schism caused so much confusion and devastation in the situation of the world. So he called himself the Angel of Judgment. So that's St. Vincent Ferrer. This is the Cathedral of Bieu Chu. Now, Bieu Chu is a city that is very, very Catholic. And we went there. This was being, as you can see, remodeled or cleaned or something. And then this is the outside of that church, a Sacred Heart Basilica or cathedral, and it's part of a complex. So to the left is the bishop's house, and to the left and closer to us is an orphanage. So we went there to see this orphanage, and this statue is a bishop from Spain who started that orphanage in 1862, and it's been in operation ever since. He was martyred in 1869 or 1868, after 7 or 8 years starting that orphanage, but it was continued. And it was really touching. They have a large number of young women who they call oblates, who just volunteer to work in the orphanage. Of course, their food is provided for. They might be given a small amount of spending money, but they dedicate themselves to these orphans. And they're not only orphans there, but they're children with deformities, with handicaps. And the children who are well physically, when they go through the orphanage at a certain age, then they leave the orphanage, go on with their life. But others that stay there. They gave us a beautiful tapestry made by a woman who is 30 years old, who is a resident of the orphanage. She can't use her hands, so she crochets with the needle in her toes. And now this is in the major seminary of Biuchu. Now, this was the area where the missionaries especially came. So it's one of the most Catholic areas. And this classroom in the seminary is up on the fifth floor. So it's a building like Mount St. Michael, not as big spreading out, but five floors high. And we were given a tour by one of the teachers there, one of the priests in that seminary. And then we went out to a balcony on the fifth floor and looked over the city, and you could see Catholic Church here, Catholic Church there, all around. So the majority of people who live there are Catholic. Now keep in mind, Vietnam is primarily Buddhist, 7.5 million Catholics, but this area had a very high concentration of Catholics. So we're in the major seminary, and then We just went around the whole complex, and they have this room called the Hall of Martyrs. So they have here a number of the martyrs, 41, I believe, who were beatified, and they have a wax figure with the bones inside. Now, if the martyr has his hands folded across the chest like this, that means the relics are inside the wax figure. And if the hands are down at the side, that means the relics are not present here, but they still have the wax figure to honor that particular martyr. And there was only one woman who was martyred, who was beatified from this group in Biuchu. And so you can see all of the others, and we'll see more of that. They showed, you know, how they were tortured. This is the cathedral in Biuchu, and I was told it's the tallest church in Asia, or in at least Southeast Asia. Very tall church, but it filled, and it happened to be a Sunday, so we were there about 5 o'clock Sunday evening after touring the seminary and the orphanage and the Hall of Martyrs. They also have like a minor seminary there, which isn't like ours for high school. It's it's like a 1 or 2 year course before they would go to the major seminary. And we're having this tour of the major seminary, and we could hear the singing, beautiful singing. So we went over there, and they had a group of about 120 young men who were going to be going into the major seminary, who were going through this program. So of course this was early to mid-August, so the other seminarians were all gone, but this group was there, and they were having a choir class, and really impressive. They all were dressed in white shirts, not, you know, in dress trousers, etc., like a sort of a uniform. So a lot more conservative than what you might come across in a Novus Ordo seminary in this country. This is outside that same church here, and in the square outside the church, they had, of course, there again, nobody's out here because they're having their Novus Ordo going on. But they had this monument or this pillar to honor the 41 martyrs from this diocese that have been beatified. So they have their names, and then I took a close-up of them. So you can see that there's 21 on the left and 20 on the right. So exactly 41 martyrs from this area who have been beatified. Now, there were about 300,000 Vietnamese martyrs, but 117 who were formally beatified by a true pope, because the church is very careful. Just because someone is put to death, well, the church has to examine the circumstances and was the reason for this person being put to death, hatred of the faith. They don't want to beatify someone who was put to death just because he was French and the government didn't like the French. Not all of the missionaries were French. There were quite a few Spanish, but primarily French missionaries in Vietnam. Now, we are on a boat, a little rowboat. Trying to think of its name. Trang An, maybe, something like that. This is the Red River Delta, and there's all these little tributaries, etc. So it's people go there, and you pay your ticket, whatever, and you get into a boat, and there's somebody rowing the boat, and four passengers, and then the person in the back rowing. And there were dozens, probably 40, 50 of boats out there on this river. And there's three different routes you can take, and one of them goes through caves. Well, I think they all do, but one goes through a longer cave. And then you'd stop at different places, and they have different Buddhist temples there that go way back. So part of the tour there, this area has been designated by UNESCO, United Nations, as a World Heritage Site. So sometimes you're traveling and you see that, different locations in different countries that have been declared World Heritage Sites because of the historical value, the beauty, or whatever, a cultural thing. Now there's Tiet with his sister drinking from a coconut. So they take a coconut, take a machete, slice off the top, and just stick a straw in there. So a lot better than drinking a soft drink when you're thirsty. Better for you. All right, there's Tiet. Oh, we're going through a cave. So we couldn't help it. We had to sing going through a cave because of the nice acoustics there. And of course, you can see they have light bulbs there. One of them was quite long. I don't know how long the cave was, but we were in there for at least several minutes to get to the end. And you have to watch your head, but it's kind of neat going through that cave. So, all right. So that's that. Now, I have to tell you, we came out of the cave. We're out in the main part of the river. And this other boat came up close to us. And the woman, because some of the rowers in the boat were women. So she was rowing the boat, and she leaned over to Tiet and said something to him in Vietnamese. He turned to me and said, "She wants to know if she can have your rosary." So I've never been asked that before, and I don't get any ideas. But so I took out my rosary and gave it to him for her. And he said, "Well, they think it's a great privilege to have a rosary that a priest had." Well, fortunately, of course, we had our missionary supply of rosaries. So I've had a mission rosary ever since. That's for the past 2 months. But actually, one of the sisters just today gave me a rosary. So if anybody wants this one, you can have it. All right. So there are the three passengers on this little trip, and that's an entrance to one of these Buddhist temples along the way. And so we're almost done here, heading back to where we started. It was extremely hot. You saw us wearing those hats, those bamboo hats. It was probably 95 degrees or so every day, and 95% humidity or thereabouts. Extremely, extremely hot. And of course, we're wearing black. Now, this is going into, I'm not sure which church. This is a church of an eccentric priest named Father Singh. And he built this church and he designed it himself. Very beautiful inside. And unfortunately, we couldn't go around because they were having a practice for an ordination in there. And I could tell that's what it was. They did the Litany of the Saints, prostration and all that. And so they were just having this practice up there. But we were respectful, went around to visit the beautiful side altars, etc., in this church. And then I went out to the front of the church. Well, this is the grotto outside the church, beautiful grotto of Our Lady. And this is the front of the church. So this priest incorporated some of the architectural styles of the pagodas, etc. But that is a beautiful Catholic church inside. And this is another view of it. And this is, we're having lunch. So I have to tell you a little bit about this. And I I told the brothers, if I had to eat with chopsticks, I would die. I would starve to death. So I said, and maybe we should do that at the seminary for Lent. All of us use chopsticks and we would have a good Lent. But what's interesting about this is we did not order, like you would order at a restaurant, each person ordering. You might tell the host, I want to try this or whatever, but they would get several dishes and they put them in the middle of the table and you have your dish and you just take from the bowls in the middle of the table. Now, we are in a town up in the hills. I don't know, probably a couple hour drive from Hanoi, but kind of west of Hanoi, up in the hills, a little town. And I just wanted to get a picture of this because we saw communist symbols everywhere. So this is an archway into the main street, into the town. And the Vietnamese flag is red background with a gold star. No problem with that. But then we also saw the hammer and sickle very often. While we were in this village, we went into somebody's house. And the downstairs was, they sold things, a little retail thing, because this is a tourist area, this particular town. Now we're upstairs, and the whole upstairs was flat, and they just have these mats that they lay down on the floor, and that's where they sleep and where they live. It's just all wide open, with thatched roofs. Had to get a picture, as another one, of the thatched roof. Thought that was interesting, of these little houses. And then we kind of took a little tour around that village. A lot of rice paddies, very common there. And you get outside of Hanoi into the country, and there you can see some of the other houses in the village and the thatched roofs. And I thought this was neat. If you can see the bunch of bananas, I never knew that bananas grew upside down. That's the bananas right there, how they grow. So I thought that was interesting. I never saw that before. We are back in Hanoi. And now we are going to a restaurant that serves snake. Now, we had goat meat, we had snake, snails, I don't know what all else. But I was not as brave as Brother Simon. He'll be a great missionary to Vietnam, I would not. If you can kind of see, this is like a fish tank, but this is full of snakes. And so you go and you tell the person there, I'd like that one. And he reaches a tool down in there with a claw, and then he picks up the snake you want, and there's one of his helpers there with a bag, and they put it in there, and then they kill it. You can even watch them, you know, process it, etc. So that's what we had in this restaurant. Now, this will be forever famous in the congregation. Brother Simon is eating the snake heart, the heart of the snake. And in fact, And what they do is you have a little cup of wine, and they call it blood wine, and they put the blood of the snake in, mix it into the wine. They eat the heart and then just take a drink of that to wash it down. So that's what he's doing. That little dish right there is where the snake heart was. And it's not cooked, it's just raw. So you eat it and just, so. And he didn't faint or anything. Tiet told us sometimes people go to that restaurant and they'll eat the snake heart and then they faint for, I don't know, but he didn't. Now, this was my primary goal, personal goal, that I wanted to visit the relics that are there of Blessed Theophane Vinard. So Blessed Theophane Vinard is famous because he wrote many letters, and he went to the seminary in Paris, run by what is called the Paris Foreign Mission Society. And in fact, if you read the articles I had in the Reign of Mary on the Marinole priests took their idea from the French Foreign Mission Society. It was founded, I think, in like the 1600s or so in France, but it specifically trained priests to send to foreign missions, particularly to Asia. So they sent a lot of French priests, and Theophane Vinard, as a seminarian and even as a priest, his letters are just very inspiring because he desired to die for the faith. He was ready and willing to be a martyr. So this is the church there at the shrine of Theophane Vinard. This is on the opposite side of the church. They had a large pond with just it's not a building. It's just like a facade, just like a entryway, and the statue of him up there. Now, this building is in the same complex, but it was a school. And of course, there's no school going on in there because of summertime. And this is outside. The shrine is to the left, but we went here. We were looking around to find somebody to show us around, and there's a young man that spoke English and gave us a tour. That's the entrance to the whole property. Now, this is inside the church. there. So you can see the picture of Blessed Theophane Vinard in the altar there, and other statues. So we're inside a beautiful church, and I was impressed with the stained glass windows there, very nice. Now, they had like a museum, and in this box was kept the skull of Theophane Vinard. Actually, after he was martyred, they kept his skull there, but eventually, when they were able to do so, the members of his order of the Society of French Foreign Mission Society took the rest of his body, his remains, back to Paris. So that's where they are, the majority of his relics. But his skull is here, and it was kept in that box for a number of years until the persecution ceased and they could publicly display it. I thought this was interesting. In that museum, they had this bier that you'd carry. There's a statue of Our Lady, you can barely see it on the left, for their processions. So I thought it quite a nice processional float or beer. So that's Theophane Vinard on the top, and on the bottom are some of the bishops of that area, of the time that he was there or subsequently. This was interesting. If you've read about the persecution in England, there were the carpenters who made priest holes, they call them, in houses. I just finished, matter of fact, while I was in Vietnam, reading the book, The Autobiography of a Hunted Priest. And so they had priests that would be trained in France, go back to England at the time of the Elizabethan persecution. The priests would be put to death. And so they would have these secret compartments in houses where priests would hide if the authorities came looking for them. So this was actually a little hiding place for a priest in this area of Vietnam. Just a simple bed and very narrow place. And this was just symbolizing a priest that was consecrated a bishop, and I don't know which one, but in that museum there. They also had some artifacts from back at the time of Theophane Vinard, and this was a mill that they would put the rice in, and you know how for wheat, you have a mill to grind the wheat, so this would separate the rice grains from the husk so that you could use the grains, cook them, etc. And so it was a very simple contraption, and you have to, it takes a little elbow grease to get it going, and you use that lever to get it going around, and then you can see probably down in the bottom where the husks come out. So that was an interesting thing there. Now that is actually, this is in a side chapel, so there is the actual skull of Blessed Theophane. And a little story of him there. Not a very big chapel, but like I said, that was, you know, my number one goal, to be able to pray there. And you can see these notebooks lying there. That's all the people putting their intentions to him when they visit the shrine. All right. So we are now in a place called Da Nang. And Da Nang is in the very center of Vietnam. So we flew from Hanoi down to Da Nang. We did not get all the way down to Saigon, unfortunately. Mention that later. But Da Nang is not a strong Catholic area. In fact, it seemed to be a real tourism area because they have the beach right there. It's right next to the ocean. And we were driving down kind of the main road along the beach, and there was hotel after hotel after hotel. So it's a very big tourism area for all of Asia. People from all around Asia go there for vacation. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. So this is Da Nang, but they have this beautiful shrine of Our Lady Star of the Sea, and it's right down there close to where all these hotels are. But the beautiful thing is it's an outdoor shrine covered with flowers, as you can see, and in the area around, there are all these benches. Now, I know it doesn't look like there are very many people there right now, but of course, I couldn't get all the panorama of all the benches there, so we're at least a dozen, 15 people, just sitting there praying the rosary, and that's throughout the day. People doing their errands or whatever will stop and visit this shrine and pray the rosary. Now, this shrine was next to a church, and the church is normally closed off to the public because it is the church of a convent. I don't remember the name of the order, but a very large convent, 100 more than 100 sisters there, a lot of them elderly sisters as well as young sisters. So it was also a retirement home for that order. So they kind of gave us a tour of the grounds, etc. There were the younger sisters were having a choir practice, so we sang a few hymns for them. They sang for us. Okay, we are now in Da Nang, and they have this bridge, and it's hard to see from here, but this part here is supposed to be the head of a dragon. And so they would shoot out fire, like, you know, dragon breathing fire, etc. So it's kind of like a little tourism thing. There's all these people there to see the fire-breathing dragon. And those two things are the humps of the dragon, and it's actually a bridge. So those would be like the suspension for the bridge. And then on this end, they have the this show every evening at whatever, 9 o'clock, whatever time it is, and all these people gather there just to see the fire-breathing dragon. So that's what that is. And that, this is another one, same thing. They'd breathe fire about 5 times and stop, and about a minute or two later, another, you know, set of 5 or so. And then you would you know when it's done, when the steam comes out. So that's how the show would end, the dragon breathing out all this steam. Now, this is a place in Da Nang called Bana Hills. Bana Hills. And by the way, I didn't know this before. One thing I learned there, the Vietnamese language has no such thing as a two-syllable word. Every word is one syllable. If you know Archbishop No Dinh Thuc, Hanoi is not one word. It's actually two words, Hanoi. But this was called Ba, another word, Na, N-A Hills. And what it is, you take a funicular, gondola to go up to the top, 15-minute ride to go up to the top. And this is the top. Oh, that's part of it. This is called the Golden Bridge, which is kind of amazing, held up by these hands, sculpted. And that is what the top is like. And what this was a French nobility or wealthy person or whatever, a group of French people, built this on the hills, the mountains actually, above Da Nang. So it's easily 10 degrees cooler up there in the summer than it is down in Da Nang. But it's now sort of like a Disneyland. I mean, walkways with flowers, vendors, restaurants, ice cream stations. They had some shows. They had all kinds of things there. Some game, some carnival type games, some rides, I guess. I didn't see those myself. It's huge. I mean, you couldn't possibly take in the whole thing. So this is just an example of it. You know, you're walking around and there's just all of these beautiful, beautiful flower gardens. Unfortunately, a statue of Buddha, too, up there. But this is the same place, just some of the flowers. And this was everywhere, and Bana Hills. This was a fountain at Bana Hills, and you can see a lot of people take pictures there. But a beautiful fountain. We're back at the Golden Bridge, which we walked across, just one of the attractions up there. Now we're down the evening, and we're at the village of Hoi An, and this is also a World Heritage Site. This is an ancient village right by the river where they have all kinds of booths and retail selling anything and everything, you know. You might have one area just for purses and so forth, that type of a place. But it went block after block after block. And it was also an open-air market. There would be food as well. But we were there in the evening, so most of that was gone. And then this is along the river. People will go on the boats, and they're all lit up with the lamps. And they go out for a tour of the river on the boat. I chose not to, but a lot of people did that. And so this is another image of that whole area of Hoi An. Very fascinating place to visit. Now, we're going to leave Da Nang and to go up to Hanoi. I'm sorry, to go up to Hue. And before we left, we visited this church or shrine of Our Lady of Fatima in Da Nang. And this is just a little side shrine there of the thing, as you can see towards the bottom, dress modestly and politely, but it's Our Lady of Fatima Sanctuary. And unfortunately, this is just a lot of shrines, etc., but this is the church at the top, and you have to climb quite a few steps to get up there. And it was a Sunday, so they were having a service there, so we weren't able to go in. But it's like an outdoor church in the sense it's open air on the sides, you know, obviously covered on top. But if you can notice on the steps, all the shoes here. So all these people put their shoes out here when they go to Mass there. All right, and this was one more of the different shrines around this large shrine to Our Lady of Fatima. So leaving Da Nang, on our way to Hue, we stopped at the shrine of Our Lady of Lavang. Our Lady of Lavang, that's how she's pictured. This isn't the main statue. This is actually in front of the gift shop, another picture or shrine of Our Lady of Lavang. But she appeared there in 1798. And what happened is the Catholics were being persecuted. So, and just like in the early church, the persecutions would wax and wane. So this was a time when a lot of Catholics were being put to death. So a number of Vietnamese people fled into the forest. And they got sick, probably because they didn't have good water or they ate something. They had to forage for what they could in the forest. And so they got sick, and Our Lady appeared to them and told them to take the leaves of a certain tree and boil them and drink that, and they would get well. So that is why the sculpture behind Our Lady, this was the area where Our Lady appeared, but that's a sculpture of those type of trees that they used to make this tea. Another image of Our Lady of Lavang, and another view of the main shrine. Like I said, all these flowers they were preparing. Well, this is shortly before August 15th, so they were getting ready for a big ceremony there. Now, this was also outside the church. This is a bas relief sculpture of the all 117 Vietnamese martyrs that were beatified. So you can see, if you look at it closely, the some with bishops holding a crozier and all kinds of different ones. Some of them European missionaries, some of them Vietnamese Catholics that were martyred and declared beatified. So this is close to Hue. Now, you know Hue, H-U-E, is the name of the city where Archbishop Tuck was the archbishop for about 7 or 8 years. And so this is the church at Lavang, the new church, because the old church was bombed, unfortunately, during the Vietnamese War, and they left that husk of, you know, what was left of the church. And inside the gift shop, I took a picture of this. It shows I think there's 27, I don't remember the exact number, I think 27 dioceses in Vietnam. And this is the area right here of Hue. So you can see it's about central where Archbishop Tuck was. And now, we had a problem with the volume, but it's hard to see. But there is a crucifix right back here that was vandalized. It was a large cross about 10 feet high, maybe 12 feet high, that was vandalized one night. And this is at a Benedictine monastery. And they left that cross on the ground, and people go there and pray in reparation for that sacrilege. And while we were there, there was a group of people praying the rosary. And so that's why I did this, so you could hear the rosary. But unfortunately, we're having audio issues. But it's beautiful. It sounds like they're singing it, with the way the Vietnamese pray the rosary. And they pray in two groups. Instead of one person leading and everyone else responding, they have one group saying the first half of the Hail Mary, the other group the second half, etc. And again, we saw that everywhere, the rosary. Here's another group. This is inside that Benedictine monastery in the chapel, another group praying the rosary there. They had beautiful stained glass windows, scenes of the Old Testament in there. And I was persuaded to climb the 7 stories up in the bell tower. So I'm just looking over the grounds. But this is now looking down on the Benedictine Monastery. This is the largest Benedictine monastery in Vietnam, and a beautiful monastery. So I actually made it to the top. And one of the things, I looked down just in a little deck outside of one of the dormitories, the statue of Our Lady. I thought that was beautiful. And now we're in front of the monastery, and as you can see, there's the bell tower, and this is the main entrance to the monastery. So I want to show you the gift shop. if you can believe it, that carving of Our Lady of Fatima, it's about 8 feet tall. This whole thing with Our Lady, the children, the tree, and the sheep, etc. They had amazing things in this gift shop. And the people, so generous. We were three families all together that sponsored us. And this one lady saying, get anything you want, anything you want. They just were so generous. We are now in Hue at the, like a summer residence of the emperor and the royal family. So I just took a couple pictures here, but one I wanted to take, if you notice the banister here on each side of the steps is actually a dragon. And one of the things you have to understand is that for the Vietnamese, the dragon is not an evil thing. We think of St. George or St. Michael slaying the dragon, and the dragon a symbol of the devil. Not so for them. Dragon was used as a symbol of royalty, and you see it in a lot of places. So it's another one of our meals here with all the food in the middle. These two gentlemen on the right were our guides in Hue, and another lady that sponsored us. Now we're inside the bishop's compound in Hue. So they told me, you're going to stay in the bishop's house. And I thought, well, what's this going to be like? But it wasn't the bishop's own personal house. It was next to it, like a hotel. And so the bishop has this, if he has his priests come for retreats, etc. So that's where we stayed, just like a hotel, but very nice residence. And that's the front of it, where we stayed in Hue. Now we're at the emperor's palace itself. And very large complex with a lot of different buildings and grounds in between and so forth. And I want to show you. One of the things you'll see, I would take pictures, I took a picture or two of people in their traditional Vietnamese garb, because again, this was the emperor's palace, and so people like to go there and get a picture of themselves wearing the traditional Vietnamese garb. Okay. Maybe. So this is probably the main building, but a lot of buildings there. So that's what I was telling you about people in their traditional garb at the emperor's palace. That's another building there of the emperor's palace. Now we are outside the cathedral of Hue, and they had these pillars of the different martyrs from that area. And if you can read, you can't see it on the bottom, but it's all in Vietnamese, but on the very bottom, they have it in English, what he said before he was martyred. And this one said, great honor, I'm about to be martyred. And that was their attitude. Here's another one. Pray for me to fulfill God's will. This one says, I am willing to suffer to die like Christ, to atone for my sins. I can't read the rest of it. This one, I want to read this. I'd rather die then deny the Lord just a moment. So just for a moment, I will not deny our Lord. So there were probably about 24 of these or so. I just took a picture of a few of them, just very impressed with that. Here was a young man that was martyred, a youth martyred. He said, to be identified with him, I wish to become dust. Oh, and then he said, he was a priest. He said, I can't quite read the rest of it. It gives the date, so he's martyred. This was just a shrine in the grounds around the Hue Cathedral. Now, the Hue Cathedral was modern, not really pretty. But these people, again, were praying the rosary in the evening. So you might be able to see Archbishop Tuck in the second row, the fourth from the left, for second one from the right. This is the bishops of Hue ever since that diocese was started. So this is just, I had to take a picture of this, the towels in the rooms in the Archbishop's house, and it says the Curiae Archiepiscopalis Huenensis, which is the Archiepiscopal Curia of Hue. Now we are in, can't remember where we are right now. Oh yes, we're back in Hanoi, and we are in a school that goes back 700 or 800 years, and it was for the royalty or promising young men from good families where they would go and they would study very hard to become like mandarins or to work in the government, that type of thing. And this was just the regulations of the school were very strict. Those who did not do homework or were not present at roll call were sentenced to the lash or had to hand in whatever that is, Chungchi paper. Those who made serious mistakes would be expelled from the school and made border guards. Students behaving badly, such as disrespecting teachers, drinking, or stealing, were forbidden to attend examinations, etc. So it's a very famous, and this is just a number of buildings. You see the dragon on the top, again, a number of buildings in there. So they had this man there. The Vietnamese language, what he is writing in, and what you see the figures behind him, the pictographs, would be like, you know, Japanese or Chinese, etc. Vietnamese used to be that, but when the French came, they alphabetized the language and taught the people to use an alphabet. So the people in Vietnam no longer know what those all those different symbols mean, but this man does. He studied it. So you can go and ask him to give you a scroll with whatever you want him to write. So Tiet wanted one that said, "For God alone." So that's what he's doing right now. And he would just, yeah, so I would just took a little bit of it. He's doing the scroll. Okay. This is another image inside that school, kind of like the, okay, now we are in the famous Hanoi Hilton. So this prison in Hanoi is no longer a prison. And in fact, it's right in the center of the city. If you're walking by and you didn't know it was that's what it was, you would just walk right by it. But this was a prison built by the French in the middle of the 19th century and then used by the Vietnamese government for Americans and other prisoners of war during the Vietnam War. So we toured that. I took a number of pictures there. They call it the Hoa Lo Detention Center. And so just different things. John McCain going back there after so many years, etc. Now, the last day, the last full day, we went to a Cistercian monastery, very large Cistercian monastery. And this garden is in honor of Our Lady of Fatima. You can see the statue of Our Lady of Fatima, and I'll have a close-up of it at one end. So the abbot of this monastery in the 1930s, thereabouts, 1930, had a devotion to Our Lady of Fatima. He erected the statue, started the garden, and had devotions to Our Lady of Fatima, and then vocations started coming in left and right. While we were there, there were, I think, about 180 monks there currently in that monastery. But we started going through the garden. If you can tell, the bushes are cut in the shape of sheep because of the Fatima children, which are on the opposite side of that little pen. They have the statues of the Fatima children. They have just different gardens around there. And then that's a close-up of the beautiful statue of Our Lady of Fatima on a trunk of a tree. Now, the gentleman there that showed us around is actually the former Archbishop of Hanoi. And he got in trouble with the Vietnamese government because he said, "I am embarrassed to be a Vietnamese because of what this government is doing." And they said to the Vatican, he has to be gotten out. And the Vatican, you know, talked to him. And he willingly retired so as to prevent problems for the church. And they said, "Where do you want to go?" And he said, "Well, I'll spend the rest of my days in the Cistercian monastery." So that's where he is. And he showed us around there. Now you can see the church to the left. We ended up going into that church. And there's a more of a close-up of the monastic church where they have their office. So we went in there, and you can see this sort of a wall separating the part where the people can come in and kneel, and then on the far side of the monks, you can barely see them. I walked up to the opening to get a better view, and I recorded it, but again, we're having audio problems. It was all in Vietnamese, but those monks are praying their office. And so this gives you a little bit better idea of how many there are. Like I said, about 180 monks there, and just trying to get probably each row. There are three rows on each side, and each one are about 25 to 30 monks in a row, praying their office. Okay, beautiful chapel. You can see the statue of Our Lady above the main altar, which towards the end, when they are concluding their prayers, they light it up in blue light behind Our Lady. Very beautiful. Okay. This was, unfortunately, I don't know what happened there, but there were also symbols of the Trinity all around the property, because the one abbot that built the church, I don't think not the first one, he had a special devotion to the Trinity. And now we're back to our home base in Hanoi, and that's where I had Mass every day that we were in Hanoi, in a home, a parishioner's home, with that little altar. So Father Pham, you know, we'll be going there soon, and they certainly need a priest. Oh, we're back home. And that's our dog. Seminarians as well, but our dog. All right, so that's it. This is just the last pictures of the visit to the Benedictine monastery. So pray for the spread of the faith in Vietnam. Okay.